With Wizard Rawl after us, and still this close, the goat would only slow us down, Sebastian warned. As much as she loved Betty, Jensen knew she had to put other things first. Still, she would give almost anything to hear that singular bleat of Betty's voice, or see her little upright tail wagging in a blur as her whole body wiggled with the excitement of Jensen's greeting. Jensen could feel the lumps of carrots under her head in the pack she was using as a pillow. She knew they couldn't stay and search for Betty, but that didn't make it any easier to know that they were leaving her for good. It broke her heart. Jensen looked back over her shoulder in the darkness. Did they hurt you? I was so worried that they would hurt you.
That Mord Sith would have. You came just in time.
What did it feel like when she touched you with the Ajeel? Sebastian thought for a moment.
Like being hit by lightning, I suppose.
Jensen laid her head back down on the pack. She wondered why she had felt nothing from the power of the Mord Sith's weapon. He had to be wondering the same thing, but if he was, he didn't ask. She would have had no answer for him anyway. Nida had been astonished too, and said that her Ajeel worked on everyone. Nida was wrong. For some reason, Jensen found that strangely worrisome. Chapter 31. Stiff and sore from the cold night on the ground, Jensen woke just as the sky was beginning to take on a faint pink glow. The western sky still displayed a sweep of stars. She hadn't slept much and wished she could sleep more, but they could not afford to linger. It could be fatal to be caught out in the open like they were, or they could be spotted from miles away. Stretching her arms over her head, the first thing Jensen laid her eyes on was the black shape of the plateau against the faint blush of the eastern sky. As she watched, the people's palace atop it took on a glow around the edges as the first golden rays of the morning sun, still beyond the horizon, touched it from behind. Standing there, looking at the palace, Jensen felt a peculiar longing. This was her homeland. She wanted so much to have some sense of her place in the world, but her homeland harbored only terror and death for her. Fearing how near they yet were to the palace and Wizard Rawl, they quickly gathered their belongings and saddled the horses. Climbing up onto a frigid saddle was a miserable experience. Jensen spread a blanket across her lap so that Rusty's heat would help warm her. She patted and rubbed the horse's neck, both out of affection and to warm her fingers. Rusty's body heat would keep her second meat pie wrapped in her bedroll tied to the back of the saddle from freezing. They rode hard, walking at times to give the horses a rest, but their effort rewarded them when later in the day the country began to bear evidence that they were reaching the edges of the Azrith Plains. Their goal was to escape into the wall of mountains rimming the western horizon. Their clear view back across the plains revealed no pursuers so far, anyway. By late in the afternoon, they rode into an area of low hills, ravines, scraggly vegetation, and stunted trees. It was as if the unbroken hard pan of the Azrith Plains could no longer keep itself flapped, and out of boredom, had to finally roll and heave into a featured terrain. The hungry horses tore at the shrubs and thick clumps of dry grasses on the way past. Even though the horses had bits in their mouths, Jensen didn't have the heart to deny them a bite to eat. She was hungry, too. The meat pies had provided them a good breakfast, but were long ago finished off. Before dark, they reached foothills leading up into more rugged country, where they made camp in the lee of a rock outcropping. At the base of a cut of rock, Jensen found a place that would provide them shelter from the wind and, for the horses, at last enough grasses to graze on. As soon as the horses were unsaddled, they eagerly began browsing on the clumps of tough stalks. Jensen pulled out some of their gear and supplies while Sebastian hunted around, coming up with remnants of some of the stunted little trees, long dead and dried to a silver gray. He used his battle axe to cut down the dry wood and built a small fire up close to the cut of rock, where it wouldn't easily be seen. While she waited for the fire to get hot, he gently laid a blanket around her shoulders.
Sitting before the fire with Sebastian close at her side, Jensen worked salt pork onto sticks and rested them across rocks so the pork could cook over the fire. "Was it hard to get to Althea's place?" he asked at last. She realized that, being preoccupied with everything that had happened, she hadn't told him much at all about what had taken place while he was being held prisoner. "I had to go through a swamp, but I made it." She didn't really want to complain about her difficulties, her fears, her battle with the snake, or nearly drowning. That was past. She had survived. Sebastian had all the while been sitting in a prison, knowing that at any moment they might put him to death or torture him. Althea was forever a prisoner in the swamp. Others had it worse than she. "The swamp sounds wonderful. It had to be better than this wretched cold. I've never seen anything like it in all my life." "You mean it isn't cold where you come from, in the old world?" "No. Winters have cold spells, nothing like this, of course, and sometimes it's rainy, too. But we never have that dreadful snow, and it's not like this miserable cold of the New World. I don't know why anyone would want to live here." She was startled at the idea of a winter without snow and cold. She had trouble even imagining it. "Where else could we live? We have no choice." "I guess," he admitted with a sigh. "Winter is wearing on. Spring will arrive before you know it. You'll see." "I hope so. I'd even rather be in that place you mentioned before, the Keeper's Furnace, than in this frozen wasteland." Jensen frowned. "The place I mentioned? I never mentioned any place called the Keeper's Furnace." "Sure you did." Sebastian used his sword to move the logs together so that the flames could build. Sparks swirled up into the darkness. "Back at the palace, just before we kissed." Jensen held her hands out, warming her fingers before the glorious heat. "I don't remember." "You said Althea had been there. Where?" "The Pillars of Creation." Jensen drew her hands back inside her cloak and stared over at him. "No, I never said that. She was talking about something else, not anywhere she'd been." "What was she talking about, then?" Jensen dismissed his question with an impatient wave of her hand. "It was just idle talk. It's not important." She pulled a ringlet of red hair away from her face. "The Pillars of Creation is a place?" He nodded as he banked the white-hot coals together with his sword. "Like I said, the Keeper's Furnace." Frustrated, she folded her arms. "What does that mean?" He looked up, puzzled by her tone. "You know, hot. Like when someone says, 'It's as hot today as the Keeper's Furnace.' That's why people will occasionally refer to the place as the Keeper's Furnace, but its name is the Pillars of Creation." "And you've been there? Are you kidding? I don't even know of anyone who has gone there. People fear the place. Some think it really is the Keeper's province, and that only death exists there." "Where is it?" He gestured south with his sword. "In a desolate place down in the old world. You know how it is. People are often superstitious about remote places." Jensen stared back into the flames, trying to reconcile it all in her head. There was something about it that wasn't exactly right. Something about it that alarmed her. "Why is it called that, the Pillars of Creation?" Sebastian shrugged, frowning again at her tone. "Like I said, it's a deserted place, hot as the Keeper's Furnace, so that's why some people call it that, the heat of the place. As for the actual name, the place is said to be, if no one goes there." "Then how does anyone know all this?" "Over time, there have been some people who have gone there, or rather, gone near there, and they've told others about it. Word spreads, knowledge is accumulated. It's in a place kind of like the plains here."
"The Azrith Plains?"
"Yes, deserted like the Azrith Plains, but much bigger. And it's always hot there, dry and deathly hot. There are a few trade routes that cross the barren fringes. Without proper clothing to protect you from the broiling sun and blistering winds,
You would bake alive in no time. Without enough water, you won't last long.
And this place is called the Pillars of Creation?
No, that's just the land you must go through first. Near the center of this vast empty land, there is said to be a low place, a broad valley, that's even hotter yet, deadly hot. Hot as the Keeper's furnace. That's the Pillars of Creation.
But why is it called the Pillars of Creation?
Sebastian mounded sand with his boots to contain the red-hot coals that dropped from the logs down into the wavering heat. It's said that down the cliffs, down the surrounding rugged rock walls and slopes, down in the vast valley, there are towering rock columns. It's for those soaring rock formations that the place is named.
Jensen turned the sticks with the salt pork.
That would make sense. Rock pillars.
I've seen towers something like that before in other places where rock is stacked up like disorderly columns of coins on a table. These are said to be more extraordinary than any others, as if the world itself were reaching up in homage toward the Creator, so some consider it a sacred place. But it's a place of deadly heat, too, so while it is thought of by some as the Creator's forge, it's also associated with the Keeper. So some call it the Keeper's Furnace. In addition to the heat, everyone has reason enough to fear going there. It remains for everyone a place of otherworldly conflict, best left alone.
Creation and destruction, life and death together?
The firelight danced in his eyes as he looked over at her.
That's what people say.
You mean some think this is a place where death itself is trying to consume the world of life?
Death is always stalking the living. Brother Narev teaches that man's own evil is what brings the Keeper's shadow to darken the world. If we give in to evil ways, that gives evil power in the world of life. Then the Keeper will be able to topple the very pillars of creation and the world will end.
The words chilled Jensen to the bone, as if the hand of death itself had touched her. It would be just like a sorceress to practice sly wiles with words. Jensen's mother had warned her that sorceresses never told what they knew, but often held back important things.
What had been Althea's true intent when she had so casually named Jensen one of the pillars of creation? Although Jensen didn't understand it, it now seemed all too clear that Althea might have had some hidden motive for planting the seed of that name in Jensen's mind.
So, what happened with Althea? Why couldn't she help you?
Jensen was startled out of her thoughts by his voice. She turned the sticks with the salt pork, seeing that it still needed more cooking, as she considered how to answer the question simply.
She told me that she tried to help me once when I was little. Darken Rall found out and crippled her for it. He twisted her gift, too, so she can't use her own magic. Now she couldn't cast a spell for me, even if she had wanted to.
Maybe, without even knowing it, Darken Rall was doing the Creator's work.
Jensen frowned in astonishment.
What do you mean?
The Imperial Order wants to eliminate magic from the world. Brother Narev says it's the Creator's work we do, because magic is evil.
And what do you think? Do you really think the gift of the Creator could be evil?
How is magic used?
His hooded gaze fixed on her. Anger clearly evident in his eyes.
Is it used to help people? Help the Creator's children in this life?
No, it is used for selfish reasons. You have only to look at the House of Rall. They've used the gift for thousands of years to rule Dahara. And what has that rule been? Has it been to help or benefit the people? Or has it been one of torture and death?
The last of it was not a question but a statement, and one Jensen could not argue.
Maybe, Sebastian added, the Creator was working through Darken Rall to lift the taint of magic from Althea, to mercifully free her from it.
Jensen rested her chin on her knees as she watched the meat sizzling. Althea said that she was left with only the gift of prophecy, complaining that it was torturous to her.
Jensen's mother had taught her to draw a grace and told her that the gift was given by the Creator. In the proper hands, a grace was magic. Even though Jensen had no magic, that magical symbol had on several occasions protected her. While she knew that people could do evil, Jensen didn't like the idea of thinking that the gift was evil. Even though she couldn't do magic, she knew that it could be a wondrous thing. She gently sought to try a different approach. You said that Emperor Jigang has sorceresses with him, the Sisters of the Light, who might be able to help me. They use magic. If magic is evil, they use magic in our cause, so that magic might one day be eliminated from the world. How could that make sense? If you truly believe magic to be evil, then how could you think to ally yourselves with what you profess to be evil? Sebastian checked the salt pork when she held one of the sticks out to him, then pulled a piece off on the point of his knife. He held up the knife and waggled it for her to see. People kill other people with knives and swords. If we wanted to eliminate knives and swords so that the killing would stop, we could hardly do so with words alone. We would have to take away people's knives and swords by force in order to stop the madness of violence for the good of everyone. People cling to evil. We would have to use knives and swords in that fight to rid the world of those evil things. Then the world would be at peace. Without the means of murder, people's passions would cool, and the keeper would flee their hearts. Jensen carved off a chunk of sizzling meat and blew on it to cool it a little. And so you use magic in that way? That's right. Sebastian chewed, giving a moan of approval to the taste before he swallowed and went on. We want to eliminate the evil of magic, but to do so, we have to use magic in the fight or else evil would win. Jensen took a juicy bite of the pork, moaning her agreement with his opinion of the taste. It was wonderful having something hot to eat. And do Brother Narev and the Emperor Jigang think that knives and swords are evil too? Of course, because their sole purpose is to maim and kill. Naturally, we don't mean tools like bread knives, but weapons certainly are evil things. People will eventually be free of their scourge, though, and then the plague of murder and death will be a thing of the past. You mean to say that even soldiers won't have weapons? No, soldiers will always have to be armed in order to defend a free and peaceful people. But then, how can people protect themselves? From what? Only the soldiers will carry deadly weapons. Jensen tilted her head toward him in admonition. Were it not for the knife I carry, soldiers would have easily murdered me along with my mother. Evil soldiers. Our soldiers fight only for good, for the defense and security of the people, not to enslave them. When we defeat the Daharan forces, then there will be peace. But even then, he leaned toward her, don't you see? Eventually, with magic eliminated, weapons will no longer be needed. It's the corrupt passions of people which are made lethal because they have access to weapons that result in crimes and murders. Soldiers have passions. He dismissed the thought with a wave of a hand. Not if they're trained properly and are under supervision of good officers. Jensen gazed off at the sparkling dome of stars. The world he envisioned certainly sounded inviting. But if what he claimed were true, then magic, as they used it, was being used for a good end. So that would mean it could be neither good nor bad, but that much like her knife, the intent of the person wielding magic actually carried the moral condition, not the magic itself. Rather than say so, she asked another question. What would a world without magic be like? Sebastian smiled wistfully. Everyone would be equal. No one would have an unfair advantage. He stabbed another piece of meat and pulled it off the stick on the point of his knife. Everyone would work together then, because we would all be the same. No one would have the unfair use of magic and be able to take advantage of others. You, for example, would be free to live your life without Lord Rawl hunting you with his magic. Althea said that Richard Rawl had been born with powers of the gift not seen in thousands of years. He had, after all, gotten closer to her than Darkin Rawl ever had. He had sent those men who had murdered her mother, but Althea had also said that Jensen was a hole in the world to those with the gift. Lord Rawl could hunt her, but not with magic.
You will never be free, Sebastian finally added in a quiet voice, until you eliminate Richard Rawl.
Her eyes turned toward him. Why me? With all those fighting against him, why do you say until I eliminate him? But even as she was asking the question, she began to see the terrible answer.
Well, he said, leaning back, I guess what I really meant to say was that you won't be free until Lord Rawl is eliminated.
He turned away and pulled a waterskin closer. She watched him take a long drink, then changed the subject.
Captain Lerner said that Lord Rawl was married.
To a confessor, Sebastian confirmed. If Richard Rawl was looking to find a wife who was his match in evil, he found her.
You know about her, then?
Only the little I've heard from the Emperor. I can tell you what I know, if you like.
Jensen nodded. With a finger and thumb, she pulled some more salt pork off one of the long sticks, eating while she watched the firelight dance in his eyes as he spoke.
The barrier between the old world to the south and the new world to the north stood for thousands of years, until Lord Rawl destroyed it so that he might conquer our people. Probably not long before your mother would have been born, I think. The new world was itself divided up into three lands. To the far west was Westland. Dahara is to the east. After killing his father and seizing rule, Richard Rawl destroyed these boundaries separating the three lands of the New World. Between Westland and Dahara is the Midlands, an evil place where magic is said to hold sway and where the confessors live. The Midlands is ruled by the Mother Confessor herself. Emperor Jagang told me that, while she is young, maybe my age, she is as smart as she is deadly.
Jensen was given pause by his chilling words. Do you know what a confessor is? What confessor means?
Holding the water skin, Sebastian draped a forearm over his bent knee.
I don't know, except that she's gifted with frightening power. Her mere touch burns away a man's mind, making him into her mindless slave.
Jensen listened, rapt, appalled by such a notion. And they really do anything she says simply because she touched them?
Sebastian handed her the waterskin. Touch them with her evil magic. Emperor Jagang told me that her magic is so powerful that if she tells a man so enslaved that she wants him to die on the spot, he will do so.
You mean he would kill himself right before her eyes?
No, I mean he would simply drop dead because she commanded it. His heart would stop or something. He would just drop dead.
Shaken by the very idea, Jensen set the water skin aside. She drew her blanket up around herself. She was exhausted, and she was weary of learning new things about Lord Rawl. Every time she learned something new, it was more terrible than the last thing. Her monster half-brother, after he had killed their father, seemed to have wasted no time in assuming the family duty of hunting her. After they'd eaten and seen to the horses, Jensen curled up under a blanket and her cloak. She wished she could go to sleep and wake to find it had all been a bad dream. She almost wished she would never wake to have to face the future. Because they had a fire, Sebastian didn't sleep with his back to hers. She missed the comfort of that. With anguishing thoughts cascading through her mind, she stared into the flames, eyes wide open, as Sebastian fell asleep. Jensen wondered what she could do now. Her mother was dead, so she had no real home. Home had been with her mother, wherever they were. She wondered if her mother was watching her from the world of the dead, along with all the other good spirits. She hoped her mother was at peace and had happiness at last. Jensen felt an empty, desolate sorrow for Althea. There could be no help from the sorceress, and none wanted. Jensen felt shame at the trouble she had brought to others who tried to help her. Her mother had died for the crime of giving birth to Jensen. Althea's sister, Lay Thea, had been murdered by Jensen's relentless hunters. Poor Althea was stuck forever in that awful swamp for the crime of trying to protect Jensen when she had been but a child. Friedrich was almost as much a prisoner as Althea, his life robbed of many joys. Jensen remembered the thrill of Sebastian's kiss. Althea and Friedrich had lost the pleasure of sharing passion. It was as if there had been that kiss for Jensen, the awakening discovery, the spark of possibility, and then there could be no more, ever. She was in her own kind of swamp, also a prison of Lord Rawl's making, trapped in the endless flight from killers. She thought about what Sebastian had said, that she would never be free until she eliminated Richard Rawl. Jensen watched Sebastian as he slept. He had come unexpectedly into her life. He had saved her life. She could never have imagined the first time she saw him, or the first night when she looked up into his eyes from across the fire after she had drawn the grace at the cave entrance, that he would one day end up kissing her. His spikes of white hair had a soft golden glow from the firelight. His face was such a pleasure for her. What more was there for them? She didn't know the answer to that. She didn't know what that kiss had meant, or where it could lead them, if anywhere. She wasn't sure she wanted it to. She wasn't sure he did. She feared he didn't. Chapter 32. The more open ground closer to the plains was soon behind them, and they began a difficult journey through deepening snow and rugged terrain, taking them slowly but inexorably up into mountainous country. Sebastian had agreed to take her where she wanted to go, to the old world. There, she hoped to be safe, to be free, for the first time in her life. Without Sebastian, such a dream would not even have been possible. He told her that the rugged range of mountains they were entering, along with their vast tracts of forests, skirted the western edge of Dahara, safely out of the way of most people, and would eventually lead them down toward the old world. As they entered the sheltering solitude among the shadows of the towering peaks, they finally began to work their way more to the south, following the mountains toward a distant liberty. The weather was brutal in the mountains. For several days they had to walk, lest they kill the poor horses. Rusty and Pete were hungry, and the heavy snow cover made it difficult for them to get at any vegetation. Their thick winter coats were getting mangy. At least they were still sound, if weak. The same could be said for her and Sebastian. As the heavy overcast darkened ominously and a light snow began to fall late one afternoon, they were fortunate to find a small village. They spent the night there, letting the horses stay in the small stable, where they had good oats and clean bedding. There was no inn in the town. Sebastian and Jensen paid a few copper pennies to sleep in the hayloft. After having been out in the open so long, Jensen felt it was a palace. The morning brought a storm with wind and snow, but even worse, the snow was interspersed with a heavy wet sleet that came in gales. Traveling in such conditions would not only be miserable, but dangerous. She was glad especially for the horses that had kept them at the stable, an extra day and another night. The horses ate and rested while Sebastian and Jensen told each other light-hearted stories from their youth. She loved to see the gleam in his eyes when he told her some of his misadventures of fishing as a boy. The next day dawned blue, but with a wind. Still, they dared not linger longer. They made their way along roads or trails, since people were few and far between. Sebastian was ever cautious, but quietly confident that they would be safe enough. With the ever-present comfort of the knife at her belt, Jensen, too, felt that it was better to risk the roads and trails rather than attempt to strike out across remote and unknown territory, covered in a thick blanket of snow. Traveling cross-country was always difficult, from time to time dangerous, and with the barrier of towering mountains all about, frequently impossible. Winter only made such travel all the more difficult, but worse, hid perils lurking beneath the snow. They feared to have a horse break a leg, attempting it needlessly. That night, as she started building them a shelter by loosely weaving together a dozen saplings and covering them with balsam boughs, Sebastian stumbled back to their camp, panting from effort. His hands were slick with blood. "Soldier," he said, trying to catch his breath. Jensen knew what soldiers he meant. But how could they have followed us? How could they? Sebastian looked away from her fury, her frantic demand. It's Lord Rawls, gifted, chasing us. He pulled a deep breath. Wizard Nathan Rawls saw you, back at the palace. That made no sense. She was a hole in the world to the gifted. How could any gifted follow a hole in the world? He saw her dubious expression. Not too hard to track through snow. Snow, of course. She nodded in resignation, her fury turning to fear. One of the Quad? I'm not sure. It was a Daharan soldier. He came out of nowhere at me. I had to fight for my life. I killed him. But we must hurry and get out of here in case there were others nearby. She was too frightened to argue. They had to keep moving. The thought of men coming out of the darkness at them lent swiftness to her actions as they saddled the horses. They were quickly mounted and soon riding hard, while there was still enough light to see by. They had to dismount then and walk to let the horses rest. Sebastian was sure they would have put distance on anyone after them. The snow helped them see so that even with clouds scudding past a partial moon, they were able to follow the road. By the next night, they were so exhausted that they had to stop, even at the risk of being captured. They slept sitting up, leaning together before a small fire with their backs to a deadfall. They made slow but steady progress in the days following, and saw no sign of anyone following them. Jensen took little comfort in that. She knew that they would not give up. A stretch of sunny days allowed them to make good time. It was no comfort to her, because they left clear tracks and the soldiers pursuing them would be able to make equally good time. They stayed to roads that had been traveled, whenever they came across them, so as to throw off and delay anyone who followed. But then the storms returned. They pushed onward for 5 days despite near blizzard conditions. As long as they could see the paths and narrow roads, they were able to put one foot in front of the other. They couldn't afford to stop, because the wind and snow covered their tracks almost as soon as they made them. Jensen had spent enough of her life outdoors to know that tracking them would be impossible in such conditions. It was their first real hope of slipping the noose from their necks. They selected roads or trails randomly. Each time they came to a crossroads or fork, Jensen was relieved to see it, because it meant another chance for their pursuers to choose wrong. Several times they cut cross-country, the drifting snow making it impossible for anyone to know where they had gone. Despite how weary she was, Jensen began to breathe easier. It was exhausting traveling in such conditions, and it seemed like the foul weather would never relent, but then it did. Late in the afternoon, as the wind finally died, allowing the quiet of winter to settle back in, they came across a woman struggling along one of the roads. As they rode up behind her, Jensen saw that the woman was carrying something heavy. Even though the weather had begun to break, fat snowflakes still drifted in the air. Sun shone through an orange slash in the clouds, lending the gray day a peculiar gilding. The woman heard them coming and stepped aside. As they reached her, she held one arm up. "Help me, please." It looked to Jensen like the woman was carrying a small child, all bundled up in blankets. By the look on Sebastian's face, Jensen feared that he intended to pass on by. He would say that they couldn't stop when they had killers and maybe even Wizard Rawl at their heels. Jensen felt confident that, for the time being at least, they had succeeded in slipping away from their hunters. When Sebastian cast her a sidelong glance, she spoke softly before he had a chance to say anything. "Looks like the Creator has provided for this needy woman by sending us to help her." Whether Sebastian was convinced by her words, or dared not challenge the Creator's intentions, Jensen didn't know, but he drew his horse around to a halt. As he dismounted and took the reins of both horses, Jensen slid down off Rusty. She struggled through heavy, knee-deep snow to reach the woman. She held out her bundle, apparently hoping it would explain everything. She looked as if she were ready to accept help from the keeper himself. Jensen drew back the flap of bleached wool blanket and saw a boy, maybe 3 or 4, with a blotchy red face. He was still. His eyes were closed. He was burning up with fever. Jensen lifted the burden from the woman's arms, The woman, about Jensen's age, looked exhausted. She hovered close, worry creasing her face.
"I don't know what's taken him," the woman said, on the verge of tears. "He just came down sick."
"Why are you out here in the weather?" Sebastian asked.
"My husband went off hunting 2 days ago. I don't expect him back for several days more. I couldn't just wait there with no help."
"But what are you doing out here?" Jensen asked. "Where are you going?"
"To the Rog Moss."
"The what?" Sebastian asked at Jensen's back.
"Healers," Jensen whispered to him.
The woman's fingers traced their way along her boy's cheek. Her eyes rarely left his little face, but she finally looked up.
"Can you help me get him there? I fear he's getting worse."
"I don't know if we..." "How far are they?" Jensen asked, cutting Sebastian off. The woman pointed down the road.
"That way, the way you're going, not far."
"How far?" Sebastian asked. The woman, for the first time, began to weep.
"I don't know. I had hoped to make it by tonight, but it will be dark before long. I fear it's farther than I can manage. Please help me."
Jensen rocked the sleeping boy in her arms as she smiled at the woman. "Of course we'll help you." The woman's fingers clutched Jensen's arm.
"I'm sorry to trouble you."
"Hush now. A ride is no trouble." "We can't leave you out here with a sick child," Sebastian agreed. "We'll take you to the healers." "Let me get up on my horse and then hand your boy up to me," Jensen said as she returned the child to his mother's arms. Once mounted, Jensen stretched her arms down. The woman hesitated, fearing to part with her child, but then quickly handed him up. Jensen settled the sleeping boy in her lap, making sure he was well balanced and secure, as Sebastian clasped arms with the woman and helped lift her up behind him. As they started out, the woman held Sebastian tight around the waist, but her eyes were on Jensen and the boy. Jensen took the lead to give the woman the assurance of being able to see the stranger, who now held her baby and her hopes. She urged Rusty ahead through the deep snow, worried that the child was not really sleeping, but unconscious with fever. The wind billowed snow around them as they raced along the road in the fading light. Concern for the boy, wanting to get him to help, made the road seem endless. Each rise revealed only more forest ahead, each curve in the road yet another sweep of empty woods. Jensen was concerned, too, that their horses couldn't be pushed so hard through deep snow without a rest or they would drop. Sooner or later, despite the fading light, they would have to slow to give the struggling horses a rest. Jensen looked back over her shoulder when Sebastian whistled.
"That way,"
the woman called, gesturing toward a cutoff to smaller trail. Jensen urged Rusty to the right, up the trail. It rose abruptly, switching back and forth to ascend the sharp rise. The trees on the mountainside were huge, with trunks as big around as her horse, rising to a great height before branches spread overhead to close off the leaden sky. The snow was unbroken by anyone before them, but the lay of the trail, the dish in the surface of the snow, the undulating but smooth line it took up through the forest among rocks and snow-crusted brush, and the way it followed beneath steep overhangs of rock wall and along ledges, made it easy enough to follow. Jensen checked the boy asleep at her lap and found him the same. She watched the forest around them for any sign of people, but saw none. After being at the palace, in Althea's swamp, and out on the Azrith Plains, it was comforting to again be in the forest. Sebastian didn't especially like the woods. He didn't like the snow either, but she found it peaceful the way the snow lent the woods a sacred silence. The smell of wood smoke hanging in the air told her that they were close. A look over her shoulder at the mother's face told her the same. Breaking over the top of a ridge revealed several small wooden buildings along a gently rising wooded slope. In a clearing behind was a small barn with a fenced paddock. A horse, at the fence rail, its ears alert, watched them approaching. The horse lifted its head, tossing a whinny their way. Rusty and Pete both snorted a brief greeting in return. Jensen put two fingers between her teeth and whistled as Rusty plowed through the drifts toward the small cabin at the upper end, the only one with smoke rising from the chimney. The door opened as she reached the building. A man threw on a flaxen cloak on his way out to greet them. He wasn't old. He could be the right age. He pulled up the cloak's broad hood against the cold before she could get a good look at his face.
"We have a sick boy," Jensen said as the man took hold of Rusty's reins. "Are you one of the healers known as the Rog Moss?"
The man nodded. "Bring him inside." The mother had already slid down off Sebastian's horse and was standing beside Jensen to receive her boy into her waiting arms.
"Thank the Creator you're here today."
The healer, laying a reassuring hand on the woman's back, urging her toward the door, tilted his head and gestured to Sebastian.
"You're welcome to put your horses in the back with mine and then come inside."
Sebastian thanked him and led the horses away while Jensen followed the other two toward the door. In the failing light, she still hadn't been able to get a good look at the man's face. It was too much to hope, she knew. But, at the very least, this man was a Rog Moss and could answer her questions.
Chapter 33. Inside the cabin, a large hearth made of rounded rocks took up most of the wall to the right. Crude burlap curtains hung to the sides of the two doorways to rear rooms. A rough-hewn mantel held a lamp, as did the plank tabletop, neither lamp lit. Oak logs crackled and popped in the hearth, lending the room a smoky but inviting aroma, as well as the soft flicker of firelight. An iron arm, black with soot, held a lidded kettle off to the side of the fire. After so long out in the weather, Jensen felt it was almost too hot inside. The healer laid the boy on one of several pallets along the wall opposite the hearth. The mother knelt on one knee, watching as he drew back the folds of the blanket. Jensen left them to examining the child as she casually checked the place, making sure there were no surprises lurking. There hadn't been any chimney smoke coming from the other cabins, and she hadn't seen any tracks through the fresh snow, but that didn't mean there couldn't be people in those other cabins. Jensen moved across the room past the trestle table in the center to warm her hands at the hearth. It gave her a chance to cast a glance into the two rooms at the rear. Each was tiny, with a sleeping pallet and a few items of clothing hanging on pegs. There was no one else in the place. Between the doorways stood simple pine cabinets. As Jensen held her hands up before the heat of the fire and the boy's mother sang him soft songs, the healer hurried to the cabinet and pulled out a number of clay jars.
"Bring a flame for the lamp, please," he asked,
as he set his armload of items on the table. Jensen pried a long splinter from one of the logs stacked to the side and held it in the wavering flames until it caught. While she lit the lamp and then replaced the tall glass chimney, he took pinches of fine powders from several of the jars and added them to a white cup.
"How is the boy?" she asked in a whisper.
He glanced across the room.
"Not good."
"What can I do to help?"
Jensen asked after she had adjusted the wick. He wiggled the stopper from a jar. "Well, if you wouldn't mind, bring over the mortar and pestle from the center cupboard." Jensen retrieved the heavy gray stone mortar and pestle for him and set it on the table beside the lamp. He was adding a mustard-colored powder to the cup. So intent was he on his task that he hadn't removed his cloak, but when he pushed the hood back out of his way, she could finally get a good look at him. His face didn't rivet her the way Wizard Rawls so unexpectedly had. She saw nothing in this man's round eyes, straight brow, or the pleasant enough line of his mouth that looked at all familiar to her. He gestured to a bottle made of wavy green glass.
"If you would, could you please grind one of those for me?"
While he hurried to the corner to lift a brown crockery pot down from a high shelf, Jensen unfastened the wire hold-down and removed the glass lid from the jar. She was astonished to see the strangest little things inside. It was the shape that so surprised her. She turned one over with a finger. It was dark, flat, and round. She could see by the light of the lamp that it was something that had been dried. She jiggled the jar. They all looked the same, like a jar full of little graces. Just like the magical symbol, these things had an outer circle, parts that suggested a square inside that, and a smaller circle inside the square. Overlaying it all, tying it together, was another structure, rather like a fat star. While not exactly a grace, the way she had always seen it drawn, it bore a remarkable resemblance. "What is this?" she asked. The healer cast off his cloak and pushed up the sleeves of his simple robes.
"Part of a flower, the dried base of the filament, from a mountain fever rose. Pretty little things they are. I'm sure you must have seen them before. They come in a variety of colors depending on where they grow, but they're best known for the common blush color. Hasn't your husband ever brought you a nosegay of mountain fever roses?"
Jensen felt her face flush. "He's not... We're just traveling together. We're friends is all."
"Oh," he said, sounding neither surprised nor curious. He pointed. "See there? The petals are attached to it here and there. When the petals and stamen are removed, and this selected part of the head is dried, they end up looking like this."
Jensen smiled. "It looks like a little grace."
He nodded, returning her smile. "And like the grace, it can be beneficial, but it can also be deadly."
"How is it possible to be both beneficial and deadly?
One of those dried flower heads, ground up and added to this drink, will help the boy sleep deeply so he can fight off the fever. Help drive it from him. More than one, though, actually causes fever."
"Really?"
Looking as if he had anticipated her question, he held up a finger as he leaned closer. "If you were to take 24, 30 for certain, there would be no cure. Such a fever is swiftly fatal. It's for this effect that the plant is named."
He showed her a sly smile.
"In many ways, an apt name for a flower so associated with love."
"I suppose," she said, thinking it over. "But if you ate more than one, but less than a couple dozen, would you still die?"
"If you were foolish enough to crush up 10 or 12 and add them to your tea, you would come down with a fever."
"And then you would eventually die, just as if you ate more?"
He smiled at the earnest concern on her face. "No, if you ate that many, it would cause a mild fever. In a day or two, you would be over it."
Jensen peered carefully in at the whole collection of the deadly little grace-like things and then set down the jar.
"It's not going to harm you to touch one," he said, seeing her reaction to the jarful. "You'd have to eat them to be affected. Even then, as I said, one in conjunction with other things will help the boy's fever."
Jensen smiled her embarrassment and reached in with two fingers to retrieve one. She dropped it in the bottom of the mortar, where it looked like nothing so much as a grace.
"If it was for an adult who was awake, I'd just crush it between my thumb and finger," the healer said as he drizzled honey into the cup. "But he's little and asleep, besides. I need to get him to drink it down easily, so grind it to a dust."
When he was finished, he added the dark dust of the little fever rose flower head Jensen had crushed for him. She guessed that it was much like the grace it resembled. It could be life-saving or lethal. She wondered what Sebastian would think of such a thing. She wondered if Brother Narev would want such mountain fever roses eradicated because they could potentially be lethal. Jensen put away the jars for the healer while he took the honeyed drink to the boy. Along with the mother's help, they put the cup to his little lips and gently worked at getting him to drink. Drop by precious drop, they coaxed the sleeping boy to suckle and swallow each little bit they dribbled into his mouth. They weren't able to rouse him, so they had to drip it into his mouth a little at a time, waiting until he swallowed as he slept, then urge him to drink a little more. While they worked, Sebastian returned from the barn. Before he closed the door, she saw stars outside. A wave of cold air rolled past her legs, sending a shiver through her shoulders. When the wind died like this as the sky cleared, it often meant a bone-chilling cold night. Sebastian made for the fire, eager to warm himself. Jensen put another log on, using the poker to position it askew so it would catch well. The healer, his hand lying gently on the woman's shoulder, nodded his assurance to her as she slowly gave the drink to her sick child.